The Peak Prosperity Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Taggart. This week, we've got a special version of the podcast. As many of our listeners know, I live out in Sonoma County in Northern California, which just experienced fairly terrible flooding a few weeks back, and had a lot of people, towns, and merchants displaced by that flood. A very real-world reminder of the precariousness of Mother Nature, how quickly disaster can happen and take people by surprise, and the toll that it takes on local communities, and the importance and resilience in recovering from disasters like this. I'm joined today by Adam Parks. Adam Parks is the owner and operator of Victorian Farmstead. It's a meat CSA local to the area here. I've interviewed him on the program in the past about his business and about sustainably raised meats, the health benefits of it, where to source them, etc. That's a great podcast. If you haven't listened to it yet, we'll have links accompanying this podcast so you can listen to it. But I've asked Adam to come here today because he was right in the thick of the action during the floods. The town that we live in, Sebastopol, California, a number of the national news coverage during the floods was shot in downtown Sebastopol. The downtown area, specifically the area called the Barlow, which was a relatively new development in town, was flooded. You know, pictures of people wading or canoeing through the streets. Adam operates the butcher shop in a community market in downtown Sebastopol. That's a co-op, a grocery store co-op, completely flooded out during the rains. So Adam, has been directly affected as a merchant, was definitely present watching the rescue efforts. We're going to talk a little bit about what happened, where the plans that were in place broke down, the aftermath of the floods, the impact that that's had on people's lives here, and what the community is doing to pull together. I've had a lot of folks in the Peak Prosperity community who are reading the updates I was posting during the floods themselves inquire about how the community is faring now. So that's what we're going to get from Adam here. So Adam, thanks so much for joining me.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right. So let's start with the flooding itself. It's been a very wet winter here in Northern California. That's generally very welcome given the droughts that we've had in the past. It is the rainy season, so we are used to rains at this time of year. But, there were enough rains in a short enough period of time. We had one of those atmospheric rivers come in where the Russian River jumped its banks. Where we live out, there's a laguna, wetlands that feeds off of the Russian River. That overflowed, and that's what hit downtown Sebastopol. People really only had a matter of hours to react to the fact that the laguna was jumping its banks. Just bring us back to kind of how quickly did the word go out, and what was the situation like when everybody started scrambling trying to deal with the rising waters?
It's tough to say because we, those of us that are local to the area that have lived here for decades, knew this was going to happen days in advance. They call it an atmospheric river now. It used to be called the El Nino or the La Nina or whatever.
The Pineapple Express.
Yeah, Pineapple Express. It seems like they keep rebranding it for modern, nomenclature. I've been through the 86 floods, the 95 flood, the 97 flood, the 2005 flood, when my grandparents and parents lived on our property. So it floods. And, we know that the place that we built our business and community market and whatnot is in a floodplain. It is designed to flood. It has very specific protocols for when the laguna gets to a certain level, X happens, and when it rises to another level, X plus Y happens, and so on. So I certainly was paying attention to the flood levels. I wasn't overly concerned about them because we were given assurances over and over and over again that the plan was in place and the plan was ready to be put into action.
All right. And so obviously the plan failed. What were the reasons why things didn't go as hoped for?
Oh, man, that's a $1 million question, right? And one of my great disappointments in this whole thing is at this point, I don't know whether the flood plan that the building was built with, I don't know whether that would have actually worked. I assume it would have, and it would have been awesome to see if it actually held back the flood waters like it was supposed to. But we'll never know because it wasn't implemented. The challenge is that when they tested so our buildings are built with what's called flood barriers or flood logs. Each building, each doorway in each building has a specific set of logs. They have to be installed in a certain order, and they have to be installed completely because pressure is applied from the top down to seal everything. There's a series of gaskets and membranes and whatnot that interact. So none of that was put into place. The few flood logs that got put up were haphazardly put up and certainly helped in places, but they weren't installed as designed. When this was all tested back in 2012, and there's a cute little video you can go look up online that shows them implementing it. It was a sunny December day, you know, 50 people staged, ready to go, and they did it in 11 and a half hours or something like that. So I guess what they didn't take into account was the exponential need for people to be staged and how far in advance you would have to do that, because people, when the roads are all flooded across the county, how are you going to get 50 people that know what they're doing to
one place at the same time?
Yeah, to the danger area, the flood area.
Yeah. Interesting. So it's probably worth making folks realize that the Barlow, the area that we're talking about, it's a relatively new development in town. It used to be the blighted part of town from back in the old days when it was apple processing warehouses. Now it's an upscale pedestrian artisan series of blocks in town where there's farm-to-table restaurants and winery tasting rooms and fine meat counters at the local grocery. As you know, Adam was saying, when the new development launched, it launched with this flood response plan, which basically you're saying didn't get executed the way that it was supposed to.
Yeah, I mean, it was vetted nine ways till Sunday, right? I mean, the city had to approve it, the county had to approve it. It was the big sticking point for building this development down in an area that classically flooded. The mistakes that were made will all come out as we go through the recovery process. I mean, nobody... we're getting a lot of questions about what if, or, you know, what if this had happened, or what if this had been implemented properly. And I think most of the business down there focused more on what now, and what ifs will come down the road when we kind of evaluate this. I know that from our standpoint, there's a couple key things that I think should happen. I think that the flood barriers need, and as a business, I need to be more proactive. That's one thing, one of my big takeaways from this in terms of resiliency and preparing for the next time this will happen, because it will happen again, is I need to be more responsible for knowing my role in a disaster like this. Where do my flood logs live? How do I get to them? I mean, ours were stored for Community Market, the grocery store that I'm housed in. Our flood logs, by the time they got to them, were under 8 feet of water.
So they were stored in a place that
flooded. Why are we storing flood logs in a place that floods?
Right.
Why are they not in some rafters somewhere on the other side of town? Why are they not stored in a custom-built cabinet on our property where we can access them 12 hours before the floodwaters even reach the street level? So there's a lot of those what-if questions going around right now. I'm concentrating more on making sure that I'm paying attention to what could I have done differently to protect my business and my host business? You know, we did everything we could. Part of the other problem that we had was most of the damage was caused by water coming in from the inside. We had more damage from the floodwaters backing up the drains and the vents and the floor. We've got probably 75 drains and vents throughout the store. And long before the water ever reached the doorways, water was bubbling up from the inside.
Those had already backed up. Interesting. All right. Well, yeah, those what ifs, and we'll get to them in a bit, but, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of litigation trying to answer those questions.
Yep.
But let's put that aside for a minute. Talk to me a bit about, you know, the actual, the turmoil during the flood itself in terms of, both. I know you were down there and this largely happened at night, right? The floodwaters.
Well, for Community Market, it didn't. I mean, so without getting too far spun out in geographics, because your listeners don't know the area, but basically as it moved east to west, our building and parking lots were the westernmost and last place to flood. So our flooding at Community Market didn't take place until Wednesday 10:30, 11 was when it started to hit the sidewalks. The back parking lot.
10:30 to 11 in the morning?
In the morning on Wednesday, where Morris Street, which is the easternmost edge of the Barlow, flooded overnight, Tuesday night. I think the waters hit, started hitting Morris Street at 2 a.m., if I hear it correctly. So for us, it was happening in slow motion right in front of us. We're also alongside a state highway, Highway 12. That had already backed up. And so we could watch the floodwaters approaching straight down the highway, and people were already canoeing and all that kind of stuff. No clue as to what was in the water. I was in waders, and couldn't believe watching people paddleboard and canoe through this stuff.
Okay. So you're in this big, grocery store co-op. Uh-huh. You realize at some point, okay, look, it looks like, you know, the grocery store is going to get flooded. You have to go into action, start trying to save your inventory, your machinery. And I assume the larger grocery store is having to do the same thing, right?
So yeah, it was a total team effort. We had a bunch of employees, grocery store employees there as well as a couple of my guys, including my nephew. And it was all hands on deck that could get there, right? You still have problems with getting employees there and all that, but...
And you're doing what? Just throwing everything you can into a car and trying to get it to dry ground? I mean, what's...
Like I said, it's really slow moving. It's not like an approaching fire where, you know, we went through in October where you're, you know, it's 5 miles away and you're wondering if you have 15 or 20 minutes to get out of the way.
Yeah.
The flood comes much, much slower than that. So we were in constant debate as to what to move and how fast to move it. Probably for my business in particular, it was a huge benefit that the power went out at about 10 o'clock. Because once the power goes out, the refrigeration's down. Now I'm concerned about my stuff, right? Now I've got to move it regardless of whether we flood or not because there's no power. We got at that point, the parking lot was still accessible. The parking lot was only about a foot deep at that point. And I got a taller truck. So we got our truck in and took the first load out, took the second load out. By the time in between the first and the second load of meat that got out of there, it probably was a foot deep the first time, and then it was up a foot into my door the second time. So it had risen about 2 feet within an hour, hour and a half in the parking lot. And then the last load, I started to pull into the parking lot and just didn't feel like the truck was going to make it, that it was going to stall out.
Okay.
So I moved the truck to high ground and we walked it out on carts from there.
Got it. Okay. And I walked down there kind of the day after when a lot of the merchants were assessing the damage, in many cases kind of for the first time. But before we get there, is there anything else about the actual, you know, day of the flood itself in terms of what was going on around the rest of the Barlow? You know, what was the, was it just chaos with?
No, you know, it's funny. It was, if anything, it was, I don't know, this is going to be a weird way to say it, but it was very surreally serene. Can you say that? Can I say that? So if you look out over the Laguna from the grocery store down Highway 12 west to east, it was really beautiful. And somebody posted on Facebook a picture down the of like the 1800s where that was actually a lake and people boated on it with parasols and, you know, big flat broad-brimmed hats. And you could see that happening. In this case, it was kayakers and people taking pictures with their cell phones while I was, you know, wading in knee-deep water trying to save my my product. So it was super frustrating. But I could see the beauty in the moment at the same time. So it was really, really annoying. So I don't know that it was chaos. It was frustrating to have so many people gawking while we were trying to save the business. But yeah.
Well, it was the community at that point down lending a hand.
There was. I mean, it was every, you know, story you hope to see on the 10 o'clock news of strangers coming up and saying, what can I do to help? People, you know, coming in and moving sandbags. We ended up once we knew that we couldn't get to our flood logs, I took my truck and trailer an hour and 15 minutes round trip or out of the way to go to a local landscape place and get sandbags. And the guy there was an old friend of ours, and he got his big truck to haul another 200 bags for us. So we were able to sandbag community market pretty readily. And people pitched in and helped, you know, community. That's one of the things that you hope for as a business and as a member of the community, both as a business member and a longtime resident of a community, is that you've, you know, when your turn's in the breach, you've earned that help, that respect, that people are going to pitch in and help you out. And that's what people did down there. It was great.
Great, great. And I definitely saw a lot of that kind of in the day after, you know, all the businesses that, that had been destroyed. And, you know, we're talking about dozens of businesses here. You know, everybody pitching in to help with just, you know, carrying out merchandise that have been destroyed by the flood. You know, once the water gets into these places, it's really not a cleaning operation. I mean, it's a deconstruction operation. You got to just kind of rip stuff out and throw it away because of the mold risk and whatnot. So just watching, you know, all the different business people help each other, but people like myself who are from the community who just showed up to say, hey, look, I care about you guys. What can I do?
Yeah.
You know, definitely a really inspirational, you know, moment like that. But I'm curious, since you were one of the folks directly affected, to folks that are listening and just, you know, something like this happens in their town, was there any particular thing that you saw where you were like, that is a great thing to do as sort of a citizen responder during an emergency like this?
I think the thing that stuck with me the most, and this was a weird disaster for me, and that sounds kind of weird to say, but my mom has been with the Red Cross and has gone all across the world helping in disaster situations, from Katrina to Andrew to all kinds of things. And the thing that I think is the biggest struggle is so many people want to help, and at some point there's just not that much to do. Mm-hmm. And particularly with a flood like this, where you're dealing with what they call grade 3 water, which is essentially the same water that comes out of your toilet. It's the same classification. It's not everybody grab a mop and let's mop it up. First of all, anytime a building floods, if you look around, even your house, you probably have 4-inch baseboards around your perimeter walls. Once water gets above that 4 inches, assuming those are sealed off, it hits the drywall, and that drywall acts like a wick in an oil lamp, and that water just shoots straight up your wall. So it doesn't matter if you flood 6 inches or 4 feet as far as the drywall is concerned. It's still going to go as high as it's going to go. We had it in the grocery store up to 18 feet in some spaces of moisture content in the wall. So all that's got to come out. It's all hazardous waste. So there's not much that I could do other than get my stuff out, get my equipment out that hadn't been affected by the water, sterilize my stuff, and move it someplace that I can make use of it. From a community standpoint, I think the biggest thing that you can do as a community member in a disaster situation like that is to look to your local first responders. Especially in a small community like ours. I mean, I make it a point anyway to know who our police chief is, who our fire chief is, who our local cops are, who our fire... I know all those guys because I've been around for a while, but I make it a point to meet them anyway, so that when something like this happens, I can either be helpful or get help. I think that's a really important step. Know your neighbors. Know, I mean, there's people in the Barlow that I just met because of this.
Right.
Other business owners that I've never taken the time to meet because I didn't have a reason to. And shame on me. That's something that I will definitely remedy in the future.
Yeah. In terms of you know, community response teams, you know, was CERT there? Were there organizations there, police, fire, whatever, that were kind of calling the shots and helping to coordinate volunteers, or was it a little more chaotic than that?
Like I said, I don't know that I'd say it was chaotic. I don't remember other than in my mind.
Or maybe unmanaged.
Yeah, it really wasn't, because again, it's such an easy area to quarantine, right? Don't go in the water. And you still had all these people that were paddleboarding in kayaks, and there was no rules or regulations for that at first. The fire department did an outstanding job, but they were dealing with fast water rescues. Part of the issue was that this flood came up through our low-income housing development in town, which is down in the Laguna, and there were people that refused to leave there. So they were all night. Tuesday night, Wednesday night, trying to do, or not trying, but actually rescuing people that wouldn't leave. So you've got those situations. In terms of managing the chaos, it was kind of stand around and wait. You can't do anything. Once the water reaches a certain level, you just kind of get out, wait for it to recede. It's a lot, and that's just torture.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, going through the fires back in 2017, it happened and it lasted a day or two or whatever. But when an area burned out, it was done, right? And then you can, you know, you let it cool off and go in. With the floods, you just got to wait for it to recede. And
right.
It doesn't make any sense. The next day is all sunny and you can't get in. What the hell?
And then it rains again. And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. So let's kind of bring it to towards a close by talking about, you know, the aftermath, community response. I know that you've been For yourself, trying to figure out, okay, how does my business continue on since we've lost our physical point of presence? I know that there's been, a ton of community meetings with all the impacted businesses. And I know you just came from one of those meetings right before this interview. So I'd love to kind of hear, what is the community doing to rebuild? What are the individual businesses doing to try to carry on? And, how is the community coming together in constructive ways to support? Like, I know there was a benefit. I know there's been several benefits, actually, but there was one this past Friday that, tried to kind of rally the town to come by, and most of the proceeds went to businesses like yours and a number of others. So what's going on right now, and what lessons maybe could people listening take to say, okay, when there's, disaster in my neighborhood, maybe we could do something like what they're doing here in Sonoma County?
I think, the response is everything you'd hoped it would be, right? There's government officials are being very proactive. Our local county supervisors have been very proactive. The problem is what does proactive mean, and selfishly, what does it do for me as a business owner? Mm-hmm. That's something that I actually reached out to our county Farm Bureau office for. And I called the executive director there, and I said, hey, you asked me how you could be helpful. Here's how. One way is to compile all the various services that are available to a business affected. There is so much information out there. Some of it's correct, some of it's not. But the problem is I don't have time right now to assimilate it. I don't have time to collect it, figure out what makes sense, what doesn't make sense, what's right for my business. Doing that for a business, whether you're a county official or whether you're a concerned citizen or whatever, helping with that kind of minutia is invaluable, because right now all I'm doing for the past 2 weeks is trying to figure out how to get my product to my customers, because that's the only revenue I've got right now.
Right. And you're having to communicate to your customers about, this audible that change that you're making to your business. You're trying to figure out how to distribute from places that aren't your normal base of operations. So you're kind of in sort of, first there's the shock, right? Then there's, I'm in survival mode. You don't have an awful opportunity to kind of lean back and survey calmly, what your full option set is. You want someone to come to you and say, hey, here's a checklist of things you could benefit from. Which of these do you want?
Yeah, I think that's invaluable. The other thing is, I think, how do you say this right? Patiently reaching out to the businesses that you support in your community. Mm-hmm. I write a newsletter for our business, and that's my primary means of communicating with my customers. And so as I found time in the first couple of days to write some kind of an update to let people know what was going on, the response was overwhelming. And we did put up a GoFundMe page, and very hesitantly, both my wife and I hated putting it up there, but we're highly encouraged to do it. I get why it's there. And we are so grateful to the people that have supported it, because it keeps my guys paid. The reality of it is I much prefer the gift certificates that we have on our website, where people can buy a gift certificate today for future purchase. That feels better to us. We even offer a 10% bonus.
Because it's not just a pure donation. You're tying it to delivering a service at some point in the future.
In fact, you're getting a benefit, a 10% bonus for doing it, with the exception of the guy that bought the gift certificate and then used it the same day. the idea of buying it today and using it in a couple months when a business is back on its feet is super helpful. And that's stretching that out so that, you're not hammering that business. I mean, one of the things we concern ourselves with is, okay, we've sold, $10,000, $15,000 worth of these gift certificates. Let's just hope they don't all come in June, because we didn't have the time to set up and stagger them or say, please don't use this until then or whatever. But our customers are awesome, and I have every confidence that they will be judicious in using them, and nobody's going to look to beat us up. They were overly generous. People have adapted to the audible, as you called it. We're kind of back to where we started. We're having people come to the farm to pick up meat, and we've been given space at the other branch of Community Market in a neighboring town. It's very adaptive. It's probably a good idea to know, to have a plan for what happens if your store. I did not have a plan for what happens if the store is shut down. Never occurred to me. And that's something that we will definitely be addressing now that we know what happens.
You've been friends with me, and you didn't have a backup plan for a disaster.
In fact, it didn't even occur to me that I didn't have a plan until I just said those words. No, it's crazy, but we really didn't. And luckily, like I said, we're pretty adaptive, and we do farmers markets, and we've been able to use those to move our product. And we've had competitors offer us space to store meats. We've had competitors offer us counters to cut, you know, in a licensed facility, so that we were sticking to what we're supposed to be doing. You know, you don't get that unless you have good relationships that you built over the time. So we're fortunate.
Right. And a good supportive community.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. So I want to thank you for your time and be sure. Sensitive that you've got places to be to continue triaging your business here. You know, first of all, I want to ask, you know, we've been talking a lot about Sebastopol and the Barlow, and that's the action that we had a front row view to. Obviously, there are lots of other towns here in Sonoma County that were affected, towns like Guerneville, where practically the entire town was underwater, right? I mean, Sebastopol is, on a relative basis, very fortunate compared sure. to a lot of these other places. So there's a lot of folks that got hit a lot worse than we did. But I wanted you here because you had front row access to the action that a lot of us have seen on the news. What are they predicting right now in terms of, you know, when most of the affected merchants are going to be able to be back up and running? Are we talking weeks? Are we talking months? Is it completely TBD at this point in time?
It's 99% TBD. We don't even have power yet. It's been 2 weeks today. And so the power to community market, I'm fortunate in that we are, a community market is the biggest anchor tenant that's a public entity in this development. So we are getting all the support of the owner because of the property, because he needs a win. He needs us open. He needs his rent checks, and he needs to show that there's some vibrancy down there. So we're getting a lot of attention, which we're very grateful for. But until we have power, I can't assess equipment damage, refrigeration damage, or any of those things. So that's the first step. And I'm told that that'll be handled sometime between now and Friday. Once we have power back on, then we can assess the rest of the damage. I've heard anything from we'll be open next week to sometime in June. So I really, it's so far out of my control right now that my job is just to maintain what we're doing and build on what we're doing, and keep everything at a even keel until we know what to expect as far as the shop opening back up.
Okay. And you are fortunate in the sense that A, you're part of community market, and they're, you know, kind of at the top of the list there.
Yep.
B, you have legacy operations that you can fall back on,
yep.
Like selling out of your farm like you used to years ago. How many other of the merchants in downtown there are not so fortunate? In other words, I guess the main question is how many may not make it?
You know, that's my fear. And it's, I'll say it's half altruistic and half selfish. So it's a very expensive development, and the people that vend there, that sell there and rent there and whatnot, I think a lot of the smaller businesses, particularly the restaurants, put everything they had into this dream of being in, you know, that old adage about buy the lousiest house in the best neighborhood.
Right.
And I think that's what a lot of them did. And so they sunk every single dime into this one thing. Now what do? Right? You've lost everything. There's a little clothing store there, Tamarind, I think it's called, and their entire inventory was in the store, didn't get out in time, flooded 5 feet deep throughout their store, lost $150,000 of inventory. That's all their inventory. I mean, that's everything that their business was built around, was in that little 500 square foot, 700 square foot shop.
Yep.
So what now?
And sorry to interrupt you, but sure. I think it bears informing folks too that yes, this was on a known floodplain, but from all the merchants I've talked to, I don't know if I've talked to one merchant yet that had flood insurance.
Not a single one. And here's why. To give you the numbers real quick, if Community Market had purchased flood insurance, it would have cost roughly $300,000 a year. We've been there 6 years, so that's $1.8 million. The damage to the store is probably, we're guessing, in the 1.1 to 1.2 range. Deal. Yes, it would be wonderful to have flood insurance and to have an insurance company to call and say, come fix everything right now so that we can open back up. But we still lose money doing that, right? The store is still down $700,000 over 6 years, and then, you know, going forward with increased premiums. So everybody knew the risks going into it. Everybody knew we were in a floodplain. Everybody knew that we weren't going to be able to afford flood insurance. Everybody relied on the plan approved by the designed by the property management, property owner, and approved by the city. So does that help today? No. It might down the road when this gets litigated or whatever, but for right now, it doesn't really matter. You know, back to the question about who survives. There's a number of stores and places there that have already committed to rebuilding. There's a few of us that have alternate sales arms of our business. For me, it's farmers markets and wholesale. Village Bakery has another location in Santa Rosa and are desperately looking for another production facility. Community Market has a separate location in Santa Rosa, and that location's up 45% since the flood. So our customers are going to find us elsewhere.
And is that largely because the community is rallying and
for sure
buying your products?
Yeah, funny, kind of a really funny story. And this involves somebody that we both know, a guy that works for me, Haji, who also happens to run the smoothie bar at Whole Foods. And he said, since I was talking to him today, and he said, since the floods, Whole Foods, which is a block away from our grocery store, has been an absolute madhouse with people coming into shop. He said the problem is they're all bitter, angry about having to shop at Whole Foods because Community Market is shut down and the Nectary is shut down where they get their smoothies. So they're all there and they're all pissed off and they don't want anything to do with being there. They just don't have any other choice. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was talking to Haji when somebody... one of the Community Market people came up and had their rant about having to shop at an Amazon-owned store. All right. So, yeah, so it's heartbreaking in many ways that there are a lot of merchants there, particularly the smaller ones that may not make it, right? And I'm just iterating or reinforcing this point because I don't think there's anything unique about Sebastopol. You know, small businesses, a lot of them have to kind of, you know, fly in a shoestring hoping that they're going to make it someday. And that just makes them a lot more vulnerable to setbacks like this. Like you, I think most small businesses also don't have a real predefined disaster plan, right? They just, their plan is I'll just deal with it when it comes up. Right. Yep. So in closing here, I do want to let folks listening who are coming to the Peak Prosperity Seminar next month in April, it's the last weekend in April. I've been in close contact with a lot of these merchants. A lot of them are merchants that we are interacting with during our weekend seminar, where we're having our kickoff party, where we're having our farm-to-table dinner, where we're having some distillery and winery tours, where we're having our big party the last night. It's about 50-50. About half of them survived the floods. They were high enough elevation where it didn't impact them. And then about half of them just got clobbered. Crooked Goat made a lot of newspapers because you've got the pictures of the guys in the kayak, basically mid-level with the floodwaters inside Crooked Goat. From what I've talked to, almost all these vendors, every vendor I've talked to has said, yes, we will be in operation in some way, shape, or form. So whether we interact with them at their location in the Barlow, if it's back up and running, or whether we interact with them at an off-premises place, I just want to make it really clear that we are continuing to support those people and those of you that are coming out here. We initially did the first Peak Prosperity Seminar out in this area last year to help the local economy recover from the big fires that you all heard about in Sonoma County. Very sad to say, a year later, we're pretty much doing the same thing because of the flooding. But your support, your dollars, your presence here is going to be every bit as appreciated as it was last year in the wake of the fires. So in advance, thanks to everybody. All right,
we're already planning for Locust for next year, so you guys will come back and have your seminar here next year too.
That's probably a pretty good business to get into right now, is this locust protection nets.
That's
for
right.
A lot of the vineyards out here. Okay, so Adam, thank you very much. Again, really appreciate you taking the time to come in and do this. I'm sure we're going to get people asking after listening to this, hey, would love to know how I can help Adam and Victorian Farmstead. As I mentioned earlier, we did a podcast about a year and a half ago or so where we went really deep into the whole sustainable meats part, which I think is absolutely very worthwhile eating style to support and food model to support. So for folks listening who eat meat, want to eat healthy meats, and want to help support this local economy rebuild, what would your advice to them be?
So we're, in fact, I think we talked about this when we did the podcast a while back, that we were just starting to explore shipping meats in the Western United States. And we actually launched that about a month before the flood happened. So we are happy to have the support. So appreciate the opportunity to talk to your audience today. The two ways that you can stay informed on what's going on with our business, and for that matter, what's going on with the flood recovery and whatnot, on our website, which is vicfarmmeats.com. That's V as in Victor, I-C, farmmeats.com. If you scroll all the way to the bottom of the homepage, there's a little place there where you can type in your email address, and that gets you our newsletter. That'll tell you, get you the updates on our flood recovery and what's going on with our business. And I hope I do a decent job of talking about how the Barlow in general is doing, because I've had a lot of questions from my my following in that regard. In terms of supporting our business, getting meats out to you, that's our lifeblood right now. So any support is super appreciated. We do have the ability to ship overnight for about $25. We offer free shipping if it's more than a $150 order. You could order directly through our website. There's a full-blown web store. We beg your patience as our offerings are not as complete right now as we would normally be because we're limited in space and so on. So sometimes it takes a little longer to get an order out depending on what we need to acquire for it. We are busy every single day packing orders and getting them shipped out. For those of you in the Bay Area, we do farmers markets. They're all listed on the website from San Jose to Moraga, East Bay, etc. And if nothing else, if you can't find the information you want, my phone number is 707-332-4605. That's my cell and our only business number. Feel free to give me a call, and I'm happy to help any way I can.
Hey, really appreciate it. And I don't want to put you on the spot here, but if people have questions about just sort of the larger recovery efforts, sure. Ways to help generally in the community and whatnot as well, mind if they reach out to you for directions?
No.
Because I know you're pretty plugged into the community that's dealing with all this.
Yeah, no, I am happy to talk about it. It's actually, I mean, just doing this podcast, like I said, it never occurred to me to have a disaster plan for something like this. I happily will talk about this with anybody who wants to, because every time I talk about it, it's somewhat cathartic, just to get some of the crap out of my head and onto the table, so to speak. But it's also brings up any discussion brings up new ideas, new ways of dealing with things. You'd asked me earlier about what people can do to be resilient and prepared and whatnot. And I think it always starts with a dialogue, right? You can't do anything until you start talking about it and fleshing out ideas and bouncing them off other people with like interests. So that's probably the start of it.
All right. Well, wise words. Adam, we're going to be seeing you at the seminar as well.
Wait.
You're going to come back as normal and give samples of your foods to everybody during one of our breaks, which is always a highlight. In the interim, folks listening, if you want to help, you know, again, Adam can direct you to different ways to help within Sonoma County. And if you want to help his business particularly rebuild, sounds like just buy some of their product. And if you live in California or several Western states, you can actually get the product shipped directly to you.
Yeah, anywhere on the West Coast. I believe it's California, Oregon, Washington, Nevada, Arizona, all falls under that $25 thing. And if not, I'll work it out with you.
Great. All right, Adam. Well, look, best of luck. And we
Thank
look
you.
Forward to seeing you at the seminar in late April. And hopefully by then you'll be back up and running in your community market center.
I hope so too. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks for coming.